Yep, you're listening to WGXC 90.7. And when I'm coming home from the turnip picking, I like to listen to the Battlefield Earth program. Boy, that guy's got some sensibility about him, doesn't he? Every Tuesday nights at 9:30. It's crazy out there.
WGXC founding underwriting support is provided by High and Mighty Therapeutic Horseback Riding and Carriage Driving, Ghent, New York, serving children and adults with special needs. For more information, applications, or to volunteer, call 518-672-4202 or online at high-n-mighty.com.
Hi, this is Darren. I'm here with my dog, Spencer. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, hands-on, listener-supported community radio.
Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXC. We have no theme song today. One of our computers is down. But I'm here with Brenda Adams. Brenda is the executive director of Columbia County Habitat for Humanity. Is that the way you say it?
That's the way we say it.
And so we're going to be talking a little bit about what Habitat does and the project that you're working on in Hudson. So maybe just give us a little bit of background. Most people know of Habitat as Jimmy Carter's, with Jimmy Carter being involved with it. At least that's where most people's consciousness wrapped around Habitat. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the organization and its history in Columbia County.
We are indeed an affiliate of Columbia County Habitat for Humanity International. The Columbia County affiliate was founded almost 20 years ago in 1994 with a board of 14 people. And we spent a year building an organization, and then we started building houses very slowly. Mm-hmm. I think our first house took us almost 2 years, and then we started building them at a rate of 1.5 houses per year. In 2008, we decided it was time to step up the pace, and we built two houses for the first time, including a women-built house. 2009, we built a house and opened our ReStore, and for each of the last 2 years, we've built two houses a year. The volume of our work is commensurate with the number of volunteers and friends that we have, mm-hmm. and we hope that this new project will introduce new friends to our work.
Right. So, and the Habitat builds houses, but they don't give the houses away. Maybe you could explain how the financing works and how people get plugged
Habitat
into it.
Habitat really has three hats. We are a builder, which is the hat that most people are mm-hmm. familiar with. We're a social service agency in that we identify families and qualify families for home ownership. That means that if a family applies for a Habitat house, they agree to partner with us to take first-time home buyers courses, to take financial literacy courses, and to spend 300 hours in the construction of their home so they understand how the house goes together, and hopefully they have the tools to transition to home ownership over time. Mm-hmm. And then we also function as a bank. We hold the mortgages on now 14 houses, which means that the homeowner will pay a mortgage that's commensurate with their income, we return either vacant land or undervalued land to the tax rolls with a house improvement.
Mm-hmm. And the land is often transferred from the city? Is that how it usually
We've had
does?
A wonderful partner with the city of Hudson. We built five houses in the 2005 through 2008 on Mill Street. And for the last 3 years, we've been doing what's called infilled housing on Columbia Street. We've been filling in vacant lots in the 200 and 400 block to mm-hmm. support the other development that's taken place on Columbia Street.
Right. So so as far as, like, how does a family become qualified? How as far as, like, income levels and things like that, what are the requirements?
The income level that we're chartered to serve is people who are in between 30 and 60% of median income in Columbia County. Mm-hmm. So that means for a family of four, the maximum income is $41,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And we generally have a call for applications in the spring, and we do outreach through the local media, through local community and religious organizations, through the school districts, and through word of mouth, posters, and also through employers. Mm-hmm. We now are sending out mailers to employers because our families come from a range of businesses in the Hudson area. Mm-hmm. They come from manufacturers, they come from the hospital, from the school districts, and also a number of small businesses in the area.
Right. So the as far as the cost to a homeowner, that this I mean, a lot of people work for work in getting the house built, and then I guess there are a number of people who donate supplies, although I'm sure that you buy some supplies as well. But on average, like, how much of a savings is it for a homeowner to get a Habitat house?
Well, the Habitat houses cost us on average $140,000 to build. The mortgage is less than that, and we have subsidies from New York State Affordable Housing Corporation, and then we have a large subsidy from our volunteers who donate professional services and labor to keep the cost down. Mm-hmm. And then the Habitat affiliate will actually underwrite some small subsidy, the difference between what it costs to build and what we're able to finance.
Mm-hmm. And so suppose you were just building it from scratch and you didn't have anybody partnering or volunteers, what would be the average cost of a house?
I think it'd probably be in the range of $180,000 to $190,000.
Okay. So it's a substantial savings there, and plus there are other subsidies that allow the homeowner to come in and be able to afford it.
That's correct.
Right. That's great. So you have a really big project coming up here, the first ever passive house. So maybe you could explain a little bit about, and these are going right next door to the two that you built last year, right?
That's correct. Over the last 3 to 4 years, we've been looking at more sustainable construction and also more sustainable longevity for the family in the life of the home.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 years ago, we built our first Energy Star 1 home, and then subsequently we moved to the next Energy Star, which is Energy Star 2. And then last year, we built the first Energy Star 3 houses in Columbia County.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that meant that families in those homes could expect to conserve or to use approximately 25% less energy in their homes.
Right.
But every year we have three speakers, local speakers, for brunches as fundraising projects. And last year, Dennis Wedlick, who has an office or a practice here in Hudson and also a practice in New York City, spoke at one of our brunches here in Hudson at Kamea. And he spoke about a passive house project that he had completed in Clive Rock, the Hudson Passive Project, which was the first certified passive house in New York State. And he kind of challenged the audience. He said, you know, if we can do this, you can do this too. He spoke for half an hour. There were another half an hour to 45 minutes of questions. And the audience clearly didn't want to let him go. They were very intrigued mm-hmm. by this possibility. And so we agreed to have a subsequent conversation, which then led to a longer conversation. And then let's give it a try. We'll run through the mechanics of what it would mean to change our construction and to change our approach to affordable housing. And let's see if we can climb this mountain together.
Mm-hmm.
So after about a year of development, we've agreed that this is a project that we think we can achieve, and we're working as partners to do it.
Right.
Do you know what a passive house is?
Well, from what I understand, it uses 90% less electricity, right?
It does. And basically, it's a super sealed house. It's a system. And through building techniques, it employs the use of the sun, natural light, and the energy that's produced in the building. And all of that is contained within the building and is used to heat the house. You use minimal heating or cooling mm-hmm. in the house. And
is it true that, I mean, I heard that it doesn't even have to have a furnace. Is that correct?
It has a much smaller
like
HVAC
some sort of heat
system.
Pump, right.
It'll have a heat pump,
right.
And we'll have some backup baseboard in the bedrooms. But the passive house that was built in Clive Rock last year did not turn on its heating system
mm-hmm.
at all last winter.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about the fact that our families, the families that we're interviewing for these houses, are paying on average between 7 and 9% of their annual income for heating costs,
right.
To reduce that by 90% will be a significant savings
mm-hmm.
for them.
So do these you said that it uses the sun. Does it actually have solar panels? Is that
no, it does not include solar panels. And that's one of the things that we are often asked are you using experimental technology for these houses?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we wouldn't do
mm-hmm.
for families on a limited income.
Right.
We wouldn't impose that condition upon them. So this is really a very tight building envelope, that is self-sustaining, and it doesn't. It will be less expensive to maintain and to heat over the life of the home, mm-hmm. and we hope that the savings will then provide a safety net for the, a financial safety net for those families.
Right. So. But you, I thought that you said that something about the energy that the home produces. So it is it
when
producing?
You take a shower, when you cook, when you're ironing, when you're watching television, when you're working on your computer, all of those things generate heat in your building.
Okay.
And it's contained within the building and then recycled within the building to keep the building at a constant temperature.
Ah, wow. So the ambient heat, actually,
yes.
right? Like the,
yes.
the various electronics that you use or light bulbs and things that generate electricity
yes.
and heat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's heating the house.
And so then this was actually technology that was developed in the 80s at MIT. And then after that, the tight house was developed. There came something called sick house syndrome because mm-hmm. the houses were so tight that the bad air didn't escape.
Right.
So now we have something, we'll have a heat exchange unit and a fresh air exchange unit that will cycle the air in the building to ensure that it's fresh and it's clean, mm-hmm. Healthy. And in fact, the air quality within the building will actually be better than in a conventional building.
Wow. And is it with filters and things like that? It
does have a filter, but really it's just a programmed unit
uh-huh.
that will program the flow of the air within the building.
Wow, really interesting. So are these the first passive houses, affordable passive houses that have been built?
That we know of.
Uh-huh.
Certainly the first attached ones, and we believe them to be the first affordable houses in New York State.
Uh-huh. And are you looking for this to be a model as you go forward? Is it something that you plan on continuing to build?
We had a groundbreaking last week, and we invited the executive director and other staff from New York State Habitat because this is something that we'd like for them to consider as a model for New York State.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very impressed with the project and are actually considering doing a passive house conference for the New York State Habitat members mm-hmm. next fall.
Right. I mean, I have to say, it's really an incredible project. I think, you know, first of all, I live right behind the houses, so I'm thrilled to have something on, you know, rather than a dirty, empty lot there. But beyond my own selfish reasons, I think it's, you know, to be looking so forward and you know, I mean, you don't even have private builders that are building this type of house in the city. And then for a nonprofit agency to be building this type of house for people of modest means, I think it's really an incredible project. It's really great to hear about, and I can't wait to see it in action. It's really going to be exciting.
Well, another level to this that's exciting for us is that we have on average 300 volunteers a year to build the houses.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our volunteers come because of community service or because they want to do something for their community. They want to give, they feel they have the means to give something back.
Right.
But volunteers also like to come to learn something. And we think that many of the techniques that are used in this building, the new insulation materials, the air sealing, the taping, the foaming are things that people can take back to their own homes, to their own communities. When the firehouse needs to be rehabbed, now they can think about it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So we also believe that there's an educational aspect to this that is a way of giving something back to our volunteers who can then take it back to their homes and communities.
Right. And so you mentioned partners. I mean, you have a lot of partners that you've been working with, that people who either companies or businesses, or just obviously in the case of the city's a partner. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about who's involved and what kind of help they give the organization.
Well, this particular project, our first partners, of course, are the City of Hudson and the Hudson Development Corporation, who donated the land for the projects.
Mm-hmm.
And
for full disclosure, I sit on the board of the Hudson Development Corporation.
So I should thank you for this, too.
Don't thank me.
Thank you for your vote. but also, we have partners. Dennis Wedlick, obviously, has donated his own time and the time of his staff. Their
right.
professional fee for this project was donated.
Right.
And then we have several commercial partners. BASF, which is a large manufacturer of insulation,
right.
is donating all of the foundation insulation, which is a new product.
Uh-huh.
Zero Energy Design is a building science firm who has done all the building calculations to make sure that we will, given our building footprint and size, that we'll meet the certification standards. The Levy Partnership is doing all of the testing and certification for the building. Mm-hmm. Crawford
and what would that and what would that entail? Just testing that the air is clean and that
and
kind
that
of
the building is tight.
I see.
That in fact it will conserve 90% of its energy because it will be certified at the end of this process, mm-hmm. and it will become a model or example for other agencies to follow and to examine.
Right.
So we want to make sure that it actually does what we say it'll do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Crawford and Associates here in Hudson is doing all of the engineering, and they're donating their professional fee. Matt Bowe, our surveyor, is donating his fee to survey the lots. This is the seventh or eighth survey he's mm-hmm. donated. We've had a long-term partnership with Harrington's, who has an office or facility here in Hudson and also in Hillsdale. They have advised us on material selections and value engineering because Habitat always has a very close budget, and
right.
Habitat's looking for ways to help us achieve our goals but also save money.
Mm-hmm.
And their salespeople have a great depth in terms of and knowledge of building materials and new building materials, and
right.
they also have good resources. So they're long-term partners with us on this project.
Mm-hmm.
And two other partners. One is Green Fiber. And the other is InterCIPS. Green Fiber manufactures cellulose insulation. And mm-hmm. so we have found they have a manufacturing facility in Albany. So we have a new program, which is tied to Restore, which we can talk about now or later,
mm-hmm.
Associated with that. And InterCIPS is a new CIPS panel manufacturing. And this is a dense polystyrene panel that will be used for the shed roof on the building.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you could just explain. I mean, we've talked about it's really a very tightly sealed building, but how do you achieve that? How does it get there?
Well, the part of it is in the structure of the building itself. The foundation has unusually thick walls. There'll be 10 inches of rigid insulation in the floor of the building between the slab and the ground.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be 8 inches of rigid insulation in the walls. And then as you move up to the frame of the building, you have two choices. You can use CIPS panels on the perimeter walls, or you can use double framing, and we're actually using double framing, which means the house will be framed traditionally around the exterior, then there'll be a 4-inch airspace, and then there'll be another set of framing on the inside,
mm-hmm.
and that's so that the heat of the building that typically escapes through the framing to the outside of the building
mm-hmm.
will be contained within the building, because the inside framing will have that airspace and additional insulation between it and the exterior.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, I think, about 24, 25 inches of attic insulation in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have limited the number of building perforations and controlled how the air flows through those perforations.
And perforations meaning?
Pipes going out of the building, going out of the
okay.
building.
Okay, all right. And how much more does it cost to build a building like that?
That's what we're going to find out. our estimates.
I hope there's no surprises.
Yes, we hope there's no surprises. But our estimates are somewhere between 10% and 15%.
Uh-huh.
And so far,
which is not really substantial,
no,
really. If you
it
took,
isn't,
if
and the return is far greater than that.
Right.
Right.
And
the return over time.
Right. Right. And how long will it take to build the structures?
Well, usually, it takes us about 6 months to build a house because we build typically 3 days a week. Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Saturdays are kind of the day that everybody knows about. Those are the large volunteer groups that come in to
mm-hmm.
build. Thursday, we have a group of regulars who...
I've been on one of those.
Yes.
It's pretty... it's intense because it's like... It's really like boom, 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 cut, cut, cut.
We hope to see you again.
I'm going
to
be there.
But and then Thursday, we have a group of 10 or 12 people that come in every week for the term of the build to build.
Right.
And then Friday... For the last 2 years, has been our Questar Classroom Day. We have a field classroom program with the construction trade students
uh-huh.
and Bill Ebel, and they come in and work 1 day a week.
So in addition to the good work that building the house is, you're also educating people on the way up, both the volunteers and the students.
One of the things I love about our organization is that we never look decisions independently. We always think about what is the best way we can accomplish what we need to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were looking to expand the number of workdays on site, we thought, what are the other organizations that we might reach out to.
Right.
And we reached out to Questar to find out that they didn't have a field classroom program, but they did have a very competent leader in Bill Ebel, mm-hmm. who was absolutely willing to rewrite his program so that he could include a day on a habitat site. And I think the kids have done great work. They've had habitat mentors so that they have more than one type of learning experience. Mm-hmm. Some of them have found summer jobs, and some of them have found out that they absolutely don't want to be in the construction trades
right.
program.
Well, that's a good thing to know as well, if you don't want to,
right.
you know.
And then we've also, so based on that that experience and that success, we reached out to Mike Veder, who's a local businessman. He owns Cool Temp, and he also is the HVAC instructor. Mm-hmm. And last year, his junior and senior classes did the entire HVAC installation for the two Energy Star 3 houses. Mm-hmm. And they did the planning, the testing, the installation, and then the blower door test, which was the final kind
right.
of thing. And I believe, this is anecdotal, but I believe it to be true, that there was a competition. The juniors did it one way and the seniors did it another. And then they, at the end of the day, they evaluated the results and won class one.
Uh-huh.
That's what I've heard.
You don't know which class, or you're not saying.
The instructor is much more diplomatic. He said it was a very productive experience for all of us. So.
So maybe you could explain a little bit about, you mentioned Energy Star 1, 2, and 3 levels. So could you explain what those are?
These are programs that New York State, NYSERDA, supports, and it's a way of transitioning homeowners and builders from conventional energy standards to higher conservation.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they are steps in air sealing. You're using tapes and caulking to reduce the amount of air that's escaping the building.
Mm-hmm.
Energy Star 3 was a little more aggressive in that they want you to add more insulation, and they have a stricter blower door test. And it also requires that you have local contractors that have been certified by NYSERDA to do your installations in a little more efficient way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all of those procedures or processes were productive for us, but we didn't think that they generated the kind of return that we could reasonably expect based on what we were learning, and
mm-hmm.
that's why the passive house became appealing to us.
Right. Do you have your eyes on any other properties in the city or somewhere else?
We have
else?
Our eyes and ears and
open at all times.
At all times for property in Hudson and also in Columbia County. You know, we are chartered to serve the larger county.
Mm-hmm.
We have houses in Hillsdale and Valencia and Chatham, and we're interested in looking at property in you know, anywhere throughout the county.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I think a lot of people are thrilled about is that you, I think you called it infill housing, right? So, you know, these vacant lots in particularly, and you've been focused on Columbia Street, at least that's for the last couple of years. And restoring the streetscape in a way that has been missing, you know, either through neglect or urban renewal, some of it, I guess, where things were bulldozed, and you've been trying to sort of put the streetscape at least
back together,
right? And
absolutely.
So that's it's such a great thing, I think. You know, I mean, just the you have. In Hudson in particular, the north side and the south side, there's such a distinct difference between the streetscapes because of a lot of it was urban renewal where whole neighborhoods and sections were bulldozed. But so that's something that you're really focused on.
We're very conscious of that. When I came to Habitat about 3 years ago, and my first office was in Joe Rapp, who has a construction company mm-hmm. on Warren Street. And it was just an extraordinary experience for me to work on Warren Street, to walk to lunch, to talk to the business people. It's a very friendly, pedestrian-friendly walking street.
Mm-hmm.
And the businesses are open and welcoming, and I thought, you know, this is a great place to live and work. And so
I couldn't agree more.
And so as we started looking at, as the Mill Street properties were being built out, we started looking at other locations. And we thought, and I was walking around looking with Bill Bateman, who was the architect who did the first Columbia Street houses. We were looking at different kinds of architecture, and I thought, this is like an encyclopedia of architecture. Mm-hmm. There's so much historic architecture, so many styles, and it has very strong visual appeal, and it has a comfort level because it's not so vertical. It's
right.
It's a very livable city. So we started looking at two things. We started at looking at places where we felt that infill housing would most support new activities, and also that we also looked at how a new housing model that would, we thought, more closely be more harmonious with the architecture in the city. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be derivative, it wouldn't be a reproduction right. historic house, but that it would blend or support historic housing.
Mm-hmm. So what I think we had a talk about this a while back is a number of people have been talking about the fact that there is very little commercial activity on the north side of town. Very few grocery stores, very few commercial ground floors. Is that something that Habitat might consider if it were the right location?
Well, you know, this is something that I brought up with New York State Habitat. We, at the moment, our housing is single family housing. But housing, families are changing and businesses are changing. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the footprint of the houses that we've just built, even though they're two-story houses, they have something at the very, it's an open floor plan on the first floor, and they have a space at the back called a flex space. And that space could be used if you had an elderly family member or a disabled family member, it would give them a bedroom on the first floor. Mm-hmm. But for a more traditional family, you could also use it as a dining room or a family room or study room or den. But for another kind of family, you could also use it as a home office mm-hmm. or a home business kind of space.
Right.
And one of the things that we're encouraging Habitat to think about is how people's lives have changed and how it's important for some people to be able to work in the home or near the home so they can also manage child care and or other family members' care. So while it's not part of our policy now, we're certainly thinking about those things and hoping that we can get other parts of the organization to think about mm-hmm. it as well.
Because certainly if in addition to helping fill in housing, if there was also commercial space that created business and created job opportunities and opportunities to make money in on the north side, that certainly would be a really positive thing to see.
I think it'd be very consistent with the history of Hudson. I think there are many you can see examples of that on Warren Street now. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we know that people who live and work in the community, they're not only lights on the street, they're customers and employees for other businesses. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have a long commute, they're one, more invested in the community, but they're also more likely to volunteer in the community
right.
for the Little League team, PTA, yeah. after school, the library, or whatever. So it becomes a much more productive cycle to mm-hmm. have families live and work in the same community.
Right. So have the buildings that you've built before, were they always like city-owned properties or town-owned properties that were turned over, or was there, or have there been different arrangements?
For the most part, we've worked with a local town or village.
Right.
And we've had, I think, one exception. We've had something that was in private hands that was a donation. Mm-hmm. And we're talking with two private owners now about prospective donations.
Mm-hmm. Great. So we'll
accept land from anyone as long as it's buildable and it conforms to the zoning code.
Right. So I'm with Brenda Adams, who's the executive director of Columbia County Habitat for Humanity. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back and talk a little bit more about what Habitat does and about Restore and all kinds of things like that. So we'll be right back on WGXC, and this is At Issue.
Do you have an event you'd like to promote with WGXC's listeners? Consider event-specific underwriting to get the word out. Pre-recorded announcements about your event will run frequently in the days, weeks, or months leading up to the occasion. Event underwriting can be customized to fit your promotional budget and lets you share your event with a large audience while supporting hands-on radio in Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more, visit wgxc.org/underwriting or call 518-697-7400.
So we're back. This is At Issue. I'm Victor Mandolia. I'm the host. And I just wanted to let the listeners be aware that all of the opinions heard on this show are either mine or my guests, and they don't positions because the station is nonpartisan. But if you'd like to have your voice heard on the radio and your opinions heard on the radio, you can do that by calling 518-828-0290, or you can send an email to info@wgxc.org and get your voice heard here at WGXC. So we're here with Brenda Adams again from Habitat for Humanity, Columbia County. And you've been working on, you just broke ground on the first passive houses that you have been building, or that you've built, which is really exciting. What else did we miss about the current project? Is this something that you would like to let people know about, this project in particular?
Well, I think that this will be a great project to volunteer for. So we really hope that people who are listening today, whose organization does community service, would consider volunteering for mm-hmm. this project. And we do have an online sign-up sheet for the project.
Is that? How do they get there?
We go to ColumbiaCountyHabitat.org, and there's a menu when you go to volunteer now. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned earlier, this will be a more expensive project to build, so if people are so inclined, we'd love to have their support for the project. And if people want to learn more about this particular kind of building and how it works, the architect for the project, Dennis Wedlick, will be speaking at a brunch at Helsinki Hudson on September 9th, and we'd love to have you join us for that brunch. And
so that's a fundraising brunch.
It is a fundraising brunch, and Kathy Greer, my favorite Subway musician, will be singing a few songs, and then Dennis will...
That's NYC Subway Girl, is
yes,
that?
Yes, yes. And a Spencertown neighbor. She lives in Spencertown. And Dennis will come and demonstrate how a passive house works and answer questions about this particular project. And he also has two other projects. He's building a house in Stuyvesant now, which is not an affordable house, but mm-hmm. will be another passive house. And I believe he has a commercial project in Ghent that is also a passive project. So
not the TCI building, is it? No, I'm just kidding. So just on a side note, since I mentioned TCI, tomorrow at the West Ghent Firehouse, there'll be a public meeting that Assemblywoman Dee Dee Barrett has called, and all of the key players, the DEC and the owner of the business and a number of other governmental agencies will all be there to answer questions about the TCI fire. So if you are so inclined, tomorrow at 6:30, I believe, at the West Ghent Fire Department on 9H, that's going on. So definitely if you are concerned or you're interested in what happened about a week ago at TCI, it's a great time to get all the information and to say what you need to say to officials as well.
So one of the other things that is different about this project is the insulation. As we've talked, it's going to be a very highly insulated building. We found a local partner in Albany called Green Fiber, who manufactures cellulose insulation.
And cellulose is like newspaper, ground-up newspaper,
it
right?
Is. So we talked to them about full-cycle how does this product move full cycle? And it turns out that they have collection bins for paper. So we asked if we could have a collection bin at our ReStore, because Hudson has recycling, but not many of the towns and villages in Columbia County do. And we have a bin outside which will take hard and soft cover books, newsprint, catalog, mail, business paper, as long as it's shredded and mm-hmm. contained. Anything but pizza boxes. I gather that the oil in the pizza doesn't blend with the coagulant that they use to hold the cellulose together.
Okay.
But anything but pizza boxes. And the green fiber bins are open 24/7, so you can come anytime with your paper. And we're going to use those, I think it's 5 or 6 containers will make the insulation for this house. Mm-hmm. And then the balance after that will be a revenue stream for to help us build the houses.
So since we mentioned Restore, tell us about Restore. Where is it, first of all?
Restore is at 829 Route 66, and it's at the intersection of 66 and 9H. The landmark is Village Dodge. It's the long, tan metal building right behind Village Dodge. And it's an extraordinary place. It's 5,000 square feet of gently used and new building materials, furniture, tiles, appliances, you name it.
And tools, equipment.
Tools, equipment, garden furniture.
Cabinetry.
Lights, everything.
Yeah.
And these are things that people felt were just too good to throw away. Or in some cases, Lowe's will discontinue a product or Williams will discontinue a product and they'll donate it. That's new uh-huh. inventory, and they'll donate it for resale. And we're open 2 days a week, Fridays and Saturdays from 9 to 5. We have about a core group of 20 volunteers managed by Jessica Willis, the store manager, who pick up clean price and display to the extent we can of the merchandise. We have a wonderful Facebook page, so if you want to know what's new and exciting, you can go to the Facebook page and see what's new.
And do you know the address for that?
I think it's Hudson Restore.
Okay.
Hudson Restore.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you for asking. And we are now exponentially more efficient because Taconic, one of the local businesses, donated a gently used van that we can now use for pickups.
Uh-huh.
This makes pickups a lot easier because our volunteers were using their own pickups and their own cars, which meant lots and lots of trips.
Right.
So hopefully we can reduce our carbon footprint by organizing our trips around the county, picking up new things.
So if people had something that they wanted to donate to Restore, then what kinds of stuff do you take? How do they get in touch with you to do that? That kind of stuff.
Well, if what we take is posted on the website. But if they want to call about specific things, they can call 518-828-0892 and speak to the Restore, and we can go through the list of acceptable items. We accept furniture, which is anything that's not upholstered or mattresses, but bookcases, cabinets, tables, chairs, etc. We take all kinds of building materials and garden furniture and tools. We actually have a reviewer from New York City who also is here in the area who reviews power tools for different magazines, and then we get all of his samples. And so we always paste that post that on Facebook because people come in to see what the newest tool is and to get it.
Right.
So, but
and that's the thing, that on the Facebook page, I mean, you put new arrivals and all kinds of stuff like that. It's really great.
It is. But we sell a lot of appliances, a lot of furniture. And so we are keeping perfectly good things out of the landfill. We're making them available to people at very affordable pricing. And then we use the proceeds to build houses for Habitat. Last year, the Restore contributed about $30,000, which was a significant gift for us for the houses. And we hope it will do.
That's after expenses and everything?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
As well or better this year.
Uh-huh.
Our expenses are very controlled. I mean, we have a full-time and a part-time person at Restore, and then we have rent and utilities. Everything else is done by volunteers.
And you mentioned that the Restore is open on Fridays and Saturdays.
Fridays and Saturdays. People who have donations, though, can drop things off during the week between 12 and 5.
And that's actually the offices of Habitat, right?
We actually have an office now. It's a storefront. We have
a
little shingle that says Columbia County Habitat, and then we have a big Restore.
The office is out there.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
It's almost as big as your office.
What else about Restore that we haven't hit?
Well, I think we've had some really good. We're hoping to expand the Restore between now and November. We're looking at additional space.
Uh-huh.
So, if that negotiation goes through, we'll have an even bigger and better Restore in November. We've had a couple of good partners for Restore this past year. Williams Lumber has donated some fixtures for the fitting of the store. Taconic has donated the truck. And we've had more donations this year, I think, than ever before as word of mouth gets out to our customers in terms of the range of our merchandise and the quality of our merchandise.
And now you have you also have a number of other fundraisers during the year, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Our fundraising efforts are largely clustered in three types of events. We do a mailing twice a year, once in the summer and once in the early winter. We do three brunches, the first of which will be the September 9th brunch with Dennis Wedlick, which will be at Helsinki Hudson, and we invite you all to come. And then we'll do two others, one in the probably January, February, and then one early to late spring. We also have an annual event called the Builder of the Year Gala, which takes place in May, in which we celebrate the completion of the most recent build and the partners who helped us achieve that goal. And that took place this past year at Basilica.
Right. And how much, like, what are the percentages of the support? Is that, how much do you raise from Restore? How much do you do from the fundraisers?
Restore, if it were to make an equal contribution this year, would be about 8 to 9% of our overall budget for the year. We do get a nice contribution from affordable housing of New York State. And then the balance of our funding comes from individuals, foundations, and volunteers.
And as far as other nonprofits in the county, do you partner with any of those? Are there relationships between like Housing Resources or other organizations like that?
We do try and coordinate or partner with other organizations as much as we can. Mm-hmm. Housing Resources obviously provide, or not obviously, but provides the first time home buyers courses for our future homeowners,
which I took and is really, 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 really helpful.
That's good to know.
There are a lot of advantages to it as far as like the match savings and things like that, 3-to-1 for down payments and things like that. But it's just if you're thinking about buying a home, it's really, really helpful just to have to go in with open eyes about, you know, getting home inspections and the credit issues and all that kind of stuff. And it's I found it really, really helpful. I think if anybody out there is considering buying a new home for the first time, it's really an excellent thing. Yeah, even if it's not the first time, really.
It's good to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really important to know. And then, of course, we're partnering with Questar for the construction trades and the HVAC. Trades. We partner with a lot of community groups, schools whose students are on a college track who need to do community service, with local courts and other institutions who want to do court-ordered community service, and with businesses who want to do team-building exercises and community organizations that do their own form of community service.
So Habitat really has tentacles like all the way out there.
I mean, we try.
It's pretty impressive, I think.
We organize almost 10,000 volunteer hours a year, and it seems, and that's how we're able to deliver the programs that we do, because we have one Habitat staff person and 1.5 Restore people.
Wow. And how does an organization that's really focused on housing, how do you manage, like, supervising people who are doing community service and things like that? How does that work?
The Habitat has a committee system, and we have the committees are divided into scopes of work. So there's finance and development. Mm-hmm. There's planning, long-range planning.
And these are committees of the board?
These are committees of the board. Right. And some of the committees also have external members. So if there are people who are interested in learning more about the work of Habitat and maybe trying Habitat on for size, they could, call us or contact us about joining the work of Habitat. Uh-huh. And then we have Family Selection, who is just about to complete its work for these two houses. Site selection, as you might imagine, and then we have the Restore Committee. And so each of these committees has a scope of work and a timeline to complete that work so that it meshes with the work of the other committees. And I guess I have the overall responsibility to make sure that those committees are on time and on schedule.
Right. So I would think that the listeners that are out there are saying, hey, how do I get myself one of those houses? So what is the process if you were interested in applying to be one of your new homeowners?
Well, it's interesting because after the groundbreaking, we had 4 phone calls from people who had not applied this cycle but were interested in applying for the next cycle. So we are now putting together a contact list for the next cycle, which will start next spring. Mm-hmm. But we also try and do outreach through the media, through radio, through print, through the schools, through employers or businesses, and through volunteer groups, daycare centers, religious organizations. Mm-hmm. So I would, if in doubt, you can call now and get your name on the list, and we'll contact you at the appropriate time. Or you can watch for the outreach in probably March, April of next year.
Mm-hmm. I suppose it never hurts to be on the list, though, right?
It doesn't. And we always, we'll always contact the applicants from the prior cycle to see if they're still interested and if they're still looking for housing. Mm-hmm. Just as a matter of context, we had 20 people apply for two homes, and many of those families qualified for housing. Mm-hmm. And our qualifications are pretty straightforward. You need to be in substandard housing, which could be that it's overcrowded or that it's in need of repairs or it has lead paint or mm-hmm. something like that. And then you need to meet the income requirements. But many of those 20 families qualified for housing, so we'd like to be able to serve more families in the future.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something, I mean, I'm sure you recognize that in Columbia County, there's a serious shortage of workforce housing or, you know, just affordable housing of any kind. That's something that I'm sure you see.
It is something
see
we see.
Anything on the horizon that might help that situation besides, I mean, your organization is obviously helping it, but it's a slow process.
Well, the Hudson Development Corporation came to us a few weeks ago to talk about a new cycle of grants that were available through the regional economic development councils. Mm-hmm. And what we learned from that process is that if we want to build more houses, that we need to get more houses in the pipeline so that we could be in a position to qualify for grants with a different timing cycle than we're currently on.
Right.
So what we've done as a result this past week is to think that we want to establish a long-range planning committee mm-hmm. that will help us be more competitive and more timely.
Shovel ready, as they
yes.
say.
Well, in this case, we were too shovel ready. Our
right.
project was starting before
right.
the grant period.
Right.
But what we thought about is if we could start thinking about planning not one but two house cycles, mm-hmm. then we would be eligible for different kinds of partnerships and funding that would allow us to leverage our capacity here.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just talk briefly about, like, how did you get involved with Habitat, your background, and we originally became acquainted because we both serve on the Columbia County Democratic Committee, but maybe you could just talk a little bit about your background and how you landed at Habitat.
Well, I landed at Habitat because in 2008, a completely wonderful woman, Joyce LePen, decided to do a women build in Columbia County, and she had enormous outreach. She called her friends who called their friends, and all of a sudden I had an invitation to participate in the build. Mm-hmm. And I came two different Saturdays with two different groups. The first group was a group of volunteers from the Columbia Land Conservancy. I served on the board and was very active there for a while. And the second group, I wanted to bring a group of women from Canaan. So we organized and came.
And that's where you live.
And that's where I live, is in Canaan. And subsequently, I met some of the Habitat people. And then a few, they had just completed a strategic plan, Habitat had. And they had decided that they were going to hire a first ever executive director. And someone reached out to me to apply for the directorship. And I said, well, I've served on nonprofit boards, and I've worked in business, but I've never worked in on the not-for-profit management or administrative side. And they said, well, just apply. So I applied, and eventually I was hired for the position. And I hit the ground running. It's a fabulous board, and a very imaginative board, a visionary board. So it was a good fit for me at a good time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my background before I came to Columbia County, my husband and I lived and worked in New York for 20 years. And I was I worked for an Italian company, and I wrote their sales and marketing plans and then initiated the projects to meet their sales goals. And
so you already had a planning and marketing.
I love planning.
Career.
I love puzzles. I love putting people and ideas together.
Uh-huh.
I love the social aspect of building things, mm-hmm. making things happen. Mm-hmm. I find that's very exciting.
And I think,
and that's one of the exciting things about Columbia County. You cannot turn the corner, but what you bump into somebody that's interesting, and you say, you think to yourself, how can I find a way to work with that person, mm-hmm. or what can we do together to spend more time together? And that's where I think Habitat has been a good vehicle for me, because I can put a lot of those people and relationships together.
Right. So you also serve on the Canaan Town Board. How long have you been doing that?
This is my fifth year on the Canaan Town Board. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I was on the planning board for 7 years. I chaired the planning board. I grew up in a rural community in North Carolina that's not unlike Columbia County, where everybody participated at some level in some organization. Mm-hmm. The planning board was a good fit for me. I was still working in the city, and we were going through a planning process and a revitalization of the planning laws, and it was an opportunity for me to learn about how local government worked and to pull together some consultants to help the town pay for a revision of its zoning laws, because mm-hmm. that's always where the rubber hits the road in small towns, is, yes, that's a great idea, but how do we pay for it?
Right.
And because I worked in New York, I had a number of friends who were weekenders here who would donate their professional fees to do the research and to do the rewriting of the zoning laws. Mm-hmm. So that was my first kind of foray into community work. And subsequently, I had the great pleasure of serving on the Land Conservancy Board for 7 years and working with that organization. I also worked with the New Lebanon Library and their capital campaign and expansion, mm-hmm. and then eventually ran for elected office. Being elected is a lot different from being appointed.
Yeah,
but it's very enjoyable work, uh-huh. and I enjoy working with my board.
And is it? How long are the terms for the town board there?
Town board terms are 4 years. So uh-huh. My first term, I filled out 2 years, and then I was elected for a four-year term.
I see. Okay. So I want to remind the listeners, first of all, that we've been here with Brenda Adams, who's the executive director of Columbia County Habitat for Humanity. Check out our Facebook page here. It's facebook.com/@issue, spelled out. And we post upcoming guests on the Facebook page, along with the archives of every show. So if you've missed something or you want to go back and hear something that you're interested in, all of the shows are archived there. So definitely check that out, and like our page if you'd like. And tell again how to get in touch with Habitat.
Okay, Habitat. You can reach Habitat at 518-828-0892. Or at ColumbiaCountyHabitat.org, and while it doesn't say on our door that we're there 24/7, it seems like we're there 24/7. But leave a message, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Uh-huh. And the ReStore again is where?
The ReStore is at 829 and the office, or at 829 Route 66, which is the intersection of 66 and 9H. And our ReStore manager is Jessica Willis. So if you have any questions about donations, what we have in inventory, or if you'd like to volunteer, call Jessica.
And remind the listeners again about the brunch.
Our next brunch is September 9th at Helsinki Hudson at 11:30 a.m. And Dennis Wedlick, the architect for the first certified passive house in New York State and the architect for our Columbia passive townhouses, will be the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathy Greer will be playing some good songs for us as well.
And how much is that?
That the ticket for that is $45 per person.
Okay, great. So, again, thanks to Brenda for joining us today. And we'll be back next week on At Issue on WGXC. I'm Victor Mendolia saying thank you for listening. We're going to close out the hour with a little bit of music. Up next is Everyone Wants to Rule the World by Patti Smith. We'll see you next week. Coming up next is Al Jazeera English at 11 o'clock. We'll see you next week on At Issue.
Mothers and the fathers in the automatic birth. These are the days of